Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City today. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm on my own this week while Mags enjoys a well-deserved holiday with the family. The show is live today, Friday, and is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. I'd love to hear from you today as I'm on my own, so please get in touch with any questions or comments that you might have. You can text the show 086 353 7782. You can phone the station on 776 2777 or email any stage during the week, kitchengarden@corkc.ie. Another busy show today, even though we don't have Mags. I'll be joined very shortly by Chris from the Hungry Moose here in Kilkenny to talk about their burgers, the best in Ireland, apparently. And later I'll have a report from a visit I made to another much talked about restaurant, Ichigo Ishi in Cork. And of course there'll be some music and jobs to be getting on in the garden with, and some nature notes and so on. But on my way into the studio today, I couldn't resist having a 99 ice cream after I dropped off some laundry from the cottages out in Callan. And there was a queue at the machine, and I'd say the man is making more money from ice creams this week than he does from anything else the whole rest of the year put together. And it made me wonder where the name 99 came from and who invented it. And so I did a bit of a search, and did you know that the first 99 was sold in 1930? 99 isn't a 99 without a Cadbury's flake in there, and the Cadbury's flake was invented by accident in the Cadbury factory by a worker who was emptying out a vat of chocolate and noticed as he poured it out that it kind of folded in on itself and made this really flaky kind of bar that they then decided to market. And then they sold individual portions of this in large boxes specifically for serving with ice cream from 1930. And initially it wasn't the soft serve ice cream that we enjoy in a cone now. They put the piece of flake, or a broken piece of flake, in between two lumps of vanilla ice cream, and those were in between two wafers. And it's thought the name 99 comes from the first place, or one of the first places to sell these, was in Scotland, in a shop whose address was 99 Portobello High Street. And there was an Italian man there, Stefano Arcari, and who invented it. So there you go. Somebody in the somebody from the Cadbury's factory saw him doing it, went back home, thought we could do this with lots of other shops, and they specially packaged the flake and sent it out to other retailers for them to serve with ice cream, regardless of where it came from. 88 years old and still absolutely delicious, and was nicely cooling for me on the way in. Now, this week has been a busy week on the small holding. Lots going on with hay being saved and stored. The muckiest, dirtiest, sweatiest job of the year, but thank God it's all finished and the hay is now safely in the loft over the barn. Almost 50 degrees in the loft in the barn on Wednesday night when I was putting away the hay, and it just hard to breathe and unbelievably uncomfortable. But I did read a story in Galway where hay actually in a field self-ignited because somebody had left an empty bottle standing on a wall, and the sun was kind of like a magnifying glass focused through the bottle on the hay lying in the field, and it started to smoulder and then it caught light. And the crop was saved, thankfully, but it just goes to show in these really, really hot conditions and with the ground and grass and forests being really, really dry, we kind of have to be careful when we're out there. But the hay is saved for the winter, so the animals at Crow and Cottages will be happy. Another thing that happened out at the holding this week was that some bees arrived to a bait hive that I had positioned up on a shed roof. And somewhere, a colony of bees decided to swarm. So a queen and a whole load of her attendant workers left that colony, flew around looking for a new home. Some scouts had been out earlier and had spotted the bait hive that I'd left up on the shed with some old honeycomb in there, and thought that'd make a nice new place for them, and they moved in. So now I have a new free colony of bees, and just before the end of June, so that should be worth its silver spoon to me. So if you catch it in May, it's worth a bale of hay or a load of hay. If you catch a swarm in June, it's worth a silver spoon. From here on in, though, they won't have too much time to kind of grow in numbers and get the stores in for the winter. So by the time August comes around, a swarm of bees isn't much good to anybody, I'm afraid. Now, paying attention to the Bourdbea food notes this week, I noticed with delight that Bourdbea and some of the other powers that be have taken notice of the campaign to reduce the amount of single-use plastic that's in circulation. And it seems that the topic of plastic waste has come to the forefront of many businesses and a lot of consumers. And it seems that an estimated 50% of all of the plastic produced in the world is used once and once only and then dumped, which, when you consider that it's made predominantly from crude oil, is just really insane. Like, this is stuff that we've limited amounts of. We're digging it up out of the ground, turning it into tat, and then essentially just throwing it out again thereafter. So if, apparently, according to this research, if the current habits continue, there'll be more plastic than fish in the ocean by 2050, because unfortunately a lot of the plastic we're producing isn't going to heat recovery or even into a tip. It's just ending up in the water and floating out to sea. So in Europe, at least, the EU is considering a ban on single-use plastics. But some businesses seem to have kind of gotten in ahead of the curve on this one and are actually taking steps themselves to limit the amount of plastic they use. The Restaurant Association of Ireland in May called on their members, 2,500 of them, to ban or no longer use plastic straws in their restaurants. McDonald's have recently announced that it will no longer provide plastic straws in their restaurants in the UK and Ireland, and they're going to go with a paper alternative as well. And I'm seeing more and more of those kind of paper straws about the place, and any little reduction in the plastic that we can do makes a difference. I have a bottle of water here with me today, but I don't know how many times I've refilled this bottle. Rather than go out and buy another one for a euro or a euro 60, I just reuse it and bring the water in with me. And it seems that the GEA have announced that they will be banning single-use plastics in Croke Park. And when you consider there's 80,000 people in there at a time, that's an awful lot of coffee cups and cutlery and straws and stuff that that will be saved there as well. So the best of luck to, or well done to, all of those kind of businesses. And with a bit of luck, then the EU might kind of get their finger out and actually implement that law. I'd like to see that coming into effect. Now, Chris Telford, how the hell are you? Thanks a million for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me, Francis. Thanks.
All the way up from John Street, from the Hungry Moose.
It's a long walk away.
A long walk.
A long walk in this weather.
It is hot out there.
It's lovely. It's beautiful.
It is gorgeous. 30 degrees it read in the car, and 30 degrees is what the forecast said we'll get. So
I think it's around the 50 as your hay barn was in the kitchen. It's great.
Now, the kitchen has to be tough on a day like today.
It's good. It's good. It's good for them. Makes them work a bit. Kind of, they think about things. It gets their brain working, I think.
Yeah,
so.
I wonder, does it get gets their brain melted? Mm. Now, the last time I was in the Hungry Moose, you were in the kitchen. So are you predominantly back in the kitchen doing your chefing stuff, or are you out front of house? Or
it's something that's been discussed a lot of late between myself and Andy, and we still haven't come to an arrangement. Sometimes I'd probably be better in the kitchen, so yeah, maybe
whatever needs doing, you do.
It's very hot at the moment, isn't it?
It is very, very hot. Andy's not volunteering to do that kind of side of things. No,
in the kitchen, absolutely not. No. No, absolutely not, never.
Now, just a bit of background on yourself, Chris. That's not a Kilkenny accent I'm picking up there.
No, we're both English. He's from Brighton, I'm from London. And yeah, we've been here. He's here 15 years and I'm here 18 years now. So it still hasn't gone away, the accent, which is good. But it does drift in and out depending on who I'm speaking to, so.
A little later on, I'll be playing a report from Takashi Miyazaki's place down in Cork, and he's Japanese. Yeah. He's only been here for 8-10 years, but every now and again, the Japanese English drops into
brilliant.
Such mad Cork accent.
I can't imagine it, but it sounds funny.
It is, yeah. But sure, we all pick up these things as we go along. I no longer sound like a skanger from the north side of Dublin, but Kilkenny has kind of knocked the edges off that. So you're over here, straight to Kilkenny, was it, when you came?
Straight to Kilkenny, yes. Bennett's Bridge, I started out in, and then we moved recently, it was 8 years ago, towards Kells, out in the sticks. Mm. It's lovely, lovely and peaceful.
That's a lovely part of the world out there. Yeah, and you were in Shirley's then for a while, of course.
I was, for Kells a couple of village. Years. Yeah. That's where we kind of got the idea to do the burgers in Kilkenny. Obviously, footfall in Kells is a little different to Kilkenny and specifically John Street, so myself and Andy came up with an idea to bring this great burger to Kilkenny City.
And predominantly the burger. So you started with the idea of the burger.
Well, it's something I always did in Mount Juliet before. I was there in the halfway house and always cooked burgers, and that was the biggest thing there. Halfway round, people would ring me and they'd have a burger there. So it kind of went on from there. I wanted to develop the burger, and then, I don't know, I just get crazy ideas sometimes and have to kind of do it and see how it goes.
But it wasn't the burger wasn't the only thing that you offered at the halfway house, but it was the one that was the most popular.
It was the one that was most popular, yeah. A few of the ladies didn't like them, so we had wraps for them and nice salads and stuff. So, but yeah, it was the biggest seller anyway.
Now, if I know those ladies, they were probably asking for a bite of somebody else's burger. I'll have the wrap and then I'll have some of your burger as well. So you came up with the idea of a burger-themed restaurant and went looking for a property. Is that it? Or
yeah, well, we had a place November, when was it? November 16, I think it was. We found a place in Kilkenny, but it wasn't the right place, and that's where the idea of the name came first. But then we looked around. It took us a long time to find a place and actually get it right and to go through the whole procedure, as it wasn't a restaurant beforehand, so we had to change usage. There's so many things we didn't have a clue about, but we learned along the way. But it took us a year, basically, to set up, and we finally got to go ahead to open. It was an amazing feeling on December the 8th. Yeah, it was great. It was brilliant.
Open the doors, welcome
the punters
in. Open the
doors and finally, hopefully sell some burgers.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Well, it's going really, really well. It's always busy. Every time I walk past or I'm in there, like, people seem to love it. And the accolades are flowing in. Earlier this week, the Irish Times.
Yeah, that came around. National Burger Day was brought around by Keepak in Dublin. They had this big presentation, and they called us up and said, look, can you come up to the presentation, your top 10 or top 3 or whatever? And I said, yeah, fine. Didn't think anything of it. But and then we won the award, Best Burger in Ireland, which is great, because it was more so people voting for us. It wasn't to do specifically with our business or anything like that. It was just the fact that a lot of people voted. They liked what we did, and they voted, which was great, because you have a lot of repeat customers, a lot of new customers as well this time of year, so it's really, really good to know that people supported us.
But for such a young restaurant to have that many people vote for you, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was huge and unexpected.
No, it's fantastic. Well,
we'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, these aren't just, well, before we get on to talk about the burgers, how the restaurant kind of came about. So, right, it might have taken you a year to find the premises and get it sorted out, or longer than a year to get it sorted out and so on. But you had a kind of an interesting funding model around the equipment in the kitchen and stuff, didn't you, rather than the typical leasing kind of...
Yeah, a fellow called Brian Phelan, he lives out in Mount Judas. He's a good friend of mine, and I get a lot of advice from him. Mm. And he said to me, he knew of this business, a friend of his, Ollie Kavanagh, and he said, speak to Ollie, see what he says. It's the first time they've actually funded a restaurant firsthand. They usually do startup models for everything else, bar, restaurant.
So this is Flender, the crowdfunding.
Yeah. And I was a bit apprehensive at first, because I've seen on the internet, you know, crowdfunding and things like that. I didn't really know what it was going to be like, or what it would make us out to appear like either. So we went ahead with it. I said, look, what the hell, we'll do it. We need the money, so let's do it. So we did it, and we got an amazing response from a lot of investors from all around Europe. It was amazing. But it was their first one that they did, and now they've taken it on board. They're doing a few others now since then. Wow. So,
And what is it that the investors get in return for their...
Well, we set a percentage rate, so they're basically investing in something that they're getting a little bit more money than they would if they had money in the bank.
Yeah.
So we set the percentage rate at 10%. Then it fluctuates between 8% and 10%, dependent on Ollie's model that he has. It's between, I think it's around 8.5% to 9% they get return back, but obviously after they've taken their bit, etc.
Sure.
Yeah,
so it's a monetary interest that they get on their,
yeah.
So Flender is kind of different to the other crowdfunder sites, where you might get like a Hungry Muse t-shirt or...
Like exactly, a, yeah. It's actually investment money investments, so they're getting money back on it. They're getting a good return on their money.
Yeah. And the advantage to you is that you didn't have to go spend yet another year talking to a bank...
Yeah.
To be told, no, we're too busy, or...
Yeah, yeah, there was a lot of that. A lot of... We had a great idea, we had a great concept, but we had no money.
Mm.
So we had to... Well, I say blag, but we had to talk to a lot of people to get where we were. So we did it, and we got through. Yeah, hopefully in the future, other organisations might be a little more kind of... helpful.
Well, I have heard that, like, the economy is on the up, we can all see that, and house prices are up, we can all see that, and people are able to borrow money again to buy property, and that's great. The one thing I'm still hearing, though, from businesses is that it's impossible to get loans from banks for equipment or anything like that.
Yeah, it's particularly restaurants, I think. Restaurants are very hard. I mean, we're only there 8 months nearly. Mm. We've got a lot to do, a long way to go, so I understand the reasoning for not lending to restaurants, but, you know, it's frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult to show 3 years of trading income when you're just trying to open the door.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We haven't even started talking about the burgers yet. Will you stick around with us, Chris?
Of course.
Great.
No worries,
okay,
yeah.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes after these.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm on my own this week. Mags is on a well-deserved holiday. And remember, the show is live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, and it's repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. If you'd like to get in touch with us on the show today, drop us a text to 086 353 7782, or you can call the station, and Jerry is out at reception. He'll take your message. And Jerry has just brought in a message, actually, asking for the name of the crowdfunding site that you were using, and it's Flender.
Flender, I believe it's Flender. I don't know if it's .ie or .com, but
a search for Flender, F-L-E-N-D-E-R, we'll find those. And then you can email the show at any stage, kitchengarden@corkc. Now, the voice that you hear with me there is Chris Telford, the owner, co-owner with Andy Brown of the Hungry Moose here in Kilkenny, recently voted by the Irish Times, or by people in a competition run by the Irish Times, as the purveyor of the best burger in Ireland. Now, about the burgers... They're not your common old garden burger. Like, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Who came up with the recipe for those?
Myself and Andy, we did a lot of research. We ate a lot of burgers, and I lost all my weight, and Andy's still trying to sort that out. So, fingers crossed he will.
That's harsh.
But, yeah, we ate a lot of burgers, and we came up with this recipe. It's all to do with the fat, obviously, fat content. The cow or the cattle itself... And the blend of the meat. So we came up with a recipe which uses chuck, short rib and brisket, and a certain percentage of each, and blend them together with a certain degree on the blender itself. And we came up with this beautiful kind of mix of meat, which is lovely.
So a lot of thought went into that. When you're getting down to selecting the actual cuts of meat and the percentage that goes into it, it's not just...
And the grind itself was important, because a fine grind we found was... okay for us, but a wider grind would be good for a frying pan as opposed to doing it on charcoal.
But it has a huge impact on the consistency of the meat then as well, of course, the way that you grind it.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. You need to be, well, I always say you have to be nice and treat it with respect when you're actually moulding it into a burger. You have to be really soft with it. Otherwise, if you squash it too much, it just... compacts, and that's why we get them delivered wrapped up in cling film and nice and soft.
And do you get those made locally for you, or?
We do, yeah. Neil Tynan's the farmer that we use from Johnstown, and obviously we have to kind of duck and dive to see the best prices. We always use Neil Tynan's meat, so we kind of use a couple of different butchers to see what's the best for us.
Isn't it fantastic, though, that you have a connection right with the source, like where the animals come from?
Yeah,
the man who's producing them, that's superb.
As I said there last week, I think it's important for cattle to go in. As I said, it sounds a bit weird, but they're going in happy. They're not stressed.
Yeah.
You've got these big abattoirs that the cattle, you know they're stressed. And obviously that going through their body is not good for them.
Yeah.
But when you get a nice, happy cow, whatever you want to call it, going in, it just, you can tell the difference. You really can.
You
probably know.
I feel the same with the pigs. It's like when you bring the pigs off, or the sheep even, off to the butcher, you can definitely taste the difference in the meat afterwards.
Yeah. Huge difference.
Yeah. So that's fantastic that you're doing that. Now, on the menu, there's a great selection of burgers. Kind of something for everybody type thing. So the one I had down there last time was the really hot one, the spicy one.
Spicy one.
Yeah.
Just with a Mexican chili on it and salsa, jalapeno salsa.
It's lovely. And then the French one, that sounds really good as well.
The French ones, we're trying to recreate the raclette, the eating way, with melting cheese on potatoes and lardons. And so we created that. So we have raclette cheese, which is really strong, melts really well, holds its shape, and we have crispy bacon on top of that and crispy potatoes. And it's potatoes in bread as well, but and chips. It's gluttony, but it's great.
Well, it's funny you talk about potatoes inside bread, because whenever I give my kids a sandwich, if there's a packet of crisps open on the table, the first thing they do is grab a few crisps and shove them
into
the sandwich.
It's like a chip butty as well.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody loves a chip sandwich. No, that's absolutely delicious. Mm. And speaking of chips, there's kind of three types of chips down with yourselves.
We have a triple cooked chip, which has been steamed, and then we fry it at 120 degrees for a few minutes until it's really, really soft. Then we cool that down, and then we flash fry it then to serve at 190, so it's really crispy and soft on the inside. We also have sweet potato fries and skinny chips.
Yeah.
Just a favourite, everyone's favourite skinny chips.
Well, the skinny chips are delicious and very Moorish, but those triple-cooked chips, oh my God, they're so good, so good. Mm. Now, if somebody's out there and they want to go in and try one of your burgers, but they're going out with a vegetarian, I presume there's a vegetarian option, is there?
Yeah, we mind vegetarians and vegans and celiacs and everyone, really. Well, we try to. Vegetarians can have, what do they have, actually? The vegans have chickpeas, and we have a lovely fresh salsa that goes into there with lots of fresh herbs and garlic. And then the vegetarians have the tofu. That's it, with olives and red onions, and again, lots of fresh herbs. And one's coated in panko breadcrumbs, the other one's more of a falafel. So, but yeah, it seems to go down well.
And a substantial meal in itself.
For sure,
nice and filling.
Yeah.
And you've a great range of beers down there as well.
Yeah, we looked, everything kind of went Canadian, which was weird.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How did that happen?
I don't know. It was really funny because we started with the Hungry Moose, obviously synonymous with Canada and other places around Europe. But we started with that was a name, and then we bought the flooring, and the flooring had Canadian street names on it. So that was that. And then we found a beer that said Moosehead Lager, so we said, right, we'll do that. So everything kind of went from there. But we have lots of beers from Canada, Hawaii, and some great local beers, actually. Yeah, Costello's and O'Hara's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was tempted by the Hawaiian one. That was a lovely beer, actually.
Which one did you have? The Longboard?
The Longboard, yeah, the Lager.
Fabulous lagers.
Lovely.
It's amazing.
Yeah, really,
such a great
really
taste.
Mm. Yeah, a long way for a Hawaiian lager to travel to get to Kilkenny, but really, really tasty.
And so we decided to go on that route and have special, funny kind of names, but we tasted every lager as well as we did burgers and came up with a good selection.
I can
selection.
See why it took you a year to get yourself organized.
I wanted 2 years out of it, but kind of had to open at this stage. You know?
Started to run out of budget. Mm. Now, a lovely range of beers and a lovely range of burgers, and the best burger in Ireland as voted by the general public in the Irish Times competition. So well done.
Thank you very much, continued
success, Chris. Now, if somebody can't get themselves into Kilkenny this week to go to the Hungry Moose on John Street and they're having a barbecue at home, do you have any tips for the amateur cook putting the barbie on the bar, or the burger on the barbie?
Well, first and foremost, is go to the butcher and get a decent burger and ask them, do some research online and go to the butcher and ask for the mince to be done there and then. Get that and create your own burgers yourself. I'm not saying that the other ones are anyway better, but create your own burger, enjoy it, put some effort into it. Then obviously the barbecue, if you've got a gas barbecue, make sure it's hot. You've got a charcoal barbecue, make sure it's the coals are kind of white. And then just slap it on, season it, just a little bit of seasoning, and slap it on and cook it. A 6-7 ounce burger should take maybe 3-4 minutes each side. But again, when you're at home, you might treat yourself and have medium rare, as opposed to we can't cook that, but, you know, at home you can do what
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, ground meat, of course, it has to be all the way through in the restaurants, yeah.
So 74, 75 degrees is a good temperature to cook it at, but if you want to treat yourself, then work away.
Yeah, I'd go a little lower than that myself. But one of the things I'm always advocating on the show here is to buy yourself a temperature probe. If you're any kind of cook at all, never be afraid. Two things. Never be afraid to use a timer and never be afraid to use a temperature probe, because always, there's nothing worse than overdoing
something. We probe every single burger that we sell in that restaurant. We have to. Well, yeah, we want to more so.
But you want to get that kind of consistency. You want to make sure it's absolutely right. The probe is the way to do it. And
exactly.
They're so inexpensive, a tenner. You know, you'll get them in Allen's in Kilkenny. Here.
That's it, yeah.
When you're putting together your burger, so you've got your ground mince that you've gotten from the butcher. Are you adding anything in there then?
We have simple salt and pepper. That's it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of butchers will put seasoning in, which contain glutens, and we can't use that because, you know, this just can't do it. So basic salt and pepper. And then it's all about, for us, it's all about the toppings.
Yeah.
So find a good topping. Our goat's cheese and bacon jam is one of our most popular ones. And it's just, you know, it's perfect. You don't want to over-season meat, I think, sometimes, especially when the meat's as good as Kilkenny provides
or produces,
I should say.
And for the amateur cook at home, would you advocate using an egg to bind the meat together?
No, don't need to. I think if you have a good fat to meat ratio, it should bind itself naturally. Don't need to put breadcrumbs in it. Don't need to put egg in it. Just mold it into a nice burger shape and mind it.
Yeah, be delicate with it.
Don't slap it around.
And don't lift it off until it's kind of done on the bottom.
No, you need to leave it there. If you leave it for 3 minutes, and then people do constantly flip burgers and steaks and things, but leave it there for 3 minutes. Let it seal, and then flip it over, and let it seal again the other side. Then you can play around with it for a bit, but mind it.
Are you a fan of the toasted bun or the untoasted bun?
Toasted, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, same here. But when we were doing the fundraising barbecue for the men's shed last month in Thomastown, I was asking everybody, I was manning the grill, and I was asking everybody, toasted bun or not. About half people don't want a toasted bun. Can't understand it.
No, I think you can go overboard on the toast. You've just got to get that in, and you can use rendered beef fat as well. Just to toast, if you spread that on underneath, in the middle of the bun, toast that down, it kind of keeps it really crispy. It's like fried bread. It's lovely.
That's a brilliant idea. Right, well, there's the tip of the interview
tip
now.
Tip of the week.
Absolutely, tip of the week. A little bit of rendered lard on the bun before you toast it.
Yeah,
essentially,
yeah,
you're frying the bread.
It's great flavour, yeah.
Well, listen, Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in. That's Chris Telford from Out Kells Way, but now currently in the Hungry Moose on John Street in Kilkenny. You can find the Hungry Moose on Facebook, facebook.com/TheHungryMooseKilkenny, or on Twitter at the_HungryMoose. Chris, thanks a million for coming in, and continued success.
Thanks very much, Francis. Thank you.
Now, we're going to take a very, very short break, and coming up after the break, I paid a visit to Takashi Miyazaki's new restaurant down in Cork, Ichigo Ichi, and you'll hear all about it in just a few seconds. Text us on 086-353-7782. Earlier this month, I paid a visit to Ireland's most talked about new restaurant, Ichigo Ichi in Cork. Here, diners are served kaiseki ryori, a traditional Japanese multi-course meal that originated in the 16th century as part of the formal tea ceremony. The idea is similar to the tasting menu now popular in a lot of high-end restaurants. Diners are served lots of small dishes, one after the other, each one showcasing a seasonal ingredient, or theme, or cooking technique. In Japan, the formal hierarchical structures in every trade mean that only after years of training under a master chef can one be considered ready to serve kaiseki ryori, and even then, it is only found in very high-end restaurants. What is exceptional and surprising in Ichigo Ichi is that its owner and chef, Takashi Miyazaki, is not formally trained as a chef at all. He is, however, skilled and has demonstrated the attention to detail and respect for his ingredients and diners for a number of years now in his other restaurant in Cork, Miyazaki. Being in the moment is the thing here. mirrored glass in the window and charcoal paint have essentially cloaked the restaurant in anonymity from the street outside. Inside, the black theme continues with Japanese styling and simple, beautiful interiors, giving the restaurant a very theatrical feel. In the restaurant, there are three dining possibilities. Takashi's Kapu counter, where you sit on a stool at the five-seater counter, watching Takashi at work as he prepares the dishes. Nagomi, or Harmony Dining, is the main seating area and accommodates up to just 12 guests on well-spaced tables. Zen, or the Japanese garden room, where I sat with a group of friends, is designed exactly for that, a space for a group to gather and enjoy the meal. During the evening, each dish was beautifully presented and was delivered to the table by well-trained, friendly staff from Ireland, Brazil, and China, a very international brigade. I first spoke to Fabian, front of house manager, who comes all the way from Brazil.
So, my name is Flavia. I'm from Brazil. I've been in Ireland for about 8 years now, most years in Dublin, so about 7 years and a half in Dublin, and since November here in Cork.
How did you leave Brazil and end up in Ireland?
Well, the plan was just to take a leap year, and it was when recession hit Brazil. I decided just to, you know, take the leap of faith and go traveling, and I end up here in Ireland and falling in love. The way I came across Takashi, I met Takashi, was because I was working in a restaurant in Dublin, just doing some eventual work for a Lux restaurant. And the chef, the head chef, Paul, introduced me to Takashi when I mentioned that I was moving down to Cork. And it was just perfect timing, I guess. And I have started working with him in February, and I was helping with the concept. And the story with the rooms are that the first area is the Zen garden, the Zen room, which is all about contemplation. We can sit up to 8 people individually, or large groups like yours, up to 10. It's all about contemplation. We only have one sitting a night there. And then when you come into the restaurant, the main area is the Nagomi area, which is the harmony room. We can sit up to 12 people here separately. And the counter is Miyabi, is where Takashi performs his techniques, you know, with the raw dishes, where people can interact with him. The name of the counter is Miyabi. It's all about being courteous and Takashi interacting with everyone. If someone has interest in interacting in the interaction with him, and I guess it's a great combination, the three rooms together, because it offers you different experiences. Although the prices are the same, because in Japanese culture there's no differentiation in terms of prices, but all the three elements combined are different experiences.
So we're in Ichigo Ishii with Takashi Miyazaki, a hero of mine, a food hero in Ireland, a champion of Irish food ingredients, even though you're not from Ireland.
Yes, I'm not. I'm from Japan. And I end up in Ireland, and I met my wife and Stephanie, she from County Offaly, but she was in Hiroshima and teaching English, and I was working in an Irish pub and restaurant, and I was doing head chef for 5 years. I was serving Irish food in Japan, but now I'm serving Japanese food in Ireland.
And when did you come back to Ireland, and how long have you been here now?
I moved in Ireland in 2008, so it's been 10 years now.
And in the time that you came back to Ireland, were you chefing in your own place or in other restaurants?
I worked for some restaurant and hotel, and but in Ireland there's no much good Japanese restaurant at the time. So I started researching about what I can do. If I don't do, who's going to do? So I started working for opening my restaurant.
And I've been to the place that you first opened. It's billed as a takeaway restaurant, but really it's something quite special. You're a fan of seasonal ingredients.
Yeah, the first the takeaway premises wasn't our plan. I was looking for a restaurant premises, but in Cork City, so many premises, empty premises there, but it didn't suit me, too big or too small or some issue on the premises. So then I just got the premises, but that was just for takeaway. And then I have changed my mind and start from small. Probably people don't know what is real Japanese food, so that start from small and promote the real Japanese food. And it's been 3 years now, and using Irish ingredients and then seaweed and meat and fish from West Cork. And actually, I was so happy with it, and it's so tasty. So let's keep using that.
Maybe we can take a quick tour around the kitchen inside there. So the kitchen that we're looking at now is much, much bigger. This is about the same size as the last restaurant.
Yeah, exactly the same size, yeah.
And now you're able to seat how many people in the restaurant here?
25 seats are, including 5 seats of counter table. Yeah.
And the model that you have in the menu is there's no choices in the menu. It's a set menu from start to finish.
It is, yeah. 12 courses in the only one menu.
I've noticed as we've enjoyed the dishes during the evening, there's a fantastic amount of preparation in each of the dishes.
Thank you very much. It's very interesting to make a menu. It's all about seasonal food. And I'm trying to get the Japanese ingredients and Japanese seasonal and Irish seasonal as well. And make a story on the menu, in 12 course menu, and make a story on the plate. Seasonal story and temperature story and texture story and flavor. And then ended up traditional way of the 3 course coming up, which is the last soup dish, pickle dish, and a rice dish like that.
Everybody noticed at the table this evening just how much preparation and work went into the dishes before they arrived at the stage where they were delivered to us. So some of these dishes, some of the pickle dishes in particular, must have taken weeks, if not months, to prepare.
Yeah, I do a few different types of pickle dish, and one of them takes 2 days. Another one is like takes 3 weeks, like, and it's all different. So, but we just all keep prepping, and then when it's ready, and then go ready to go.
And you have a novel idea here in the restaurant as well, where you prepare some of the dishes in front of some of the diners at the front of the restaurant.
Yeah, I'm behind the counter always, and the counter table, and then one dining room. People can see and when I'm prepping and plating the dish, such as a sushi dish and then cold dish, which is sashimi dish, and then some pickle dish, and then we have a chat with the customer and explain the what is this, what is this come from, what is this idea from, what the ingredients from.
Now, it's not all you that does the work here, and we're back in the kitchen at the moment, and I'm looking around and there's several staff here beavering away, and I've seen these lads looking busy. So who else do we have in the kitchen here this evening?
This is my sous chef, Sergio. He's from Spain. And Adam from Waterford. And another one is Michael. He finished early today, and he's from Cork. And then today we got Vivian from
Taiwan.
The real China, Taiwan.
And I'm working in Ichigo EGA almost 2 months. And I enjoy working here because Miyazaki, he's very, very professional chef. And then I work in hospitality almost 5 years. So sometimes it's kind of scared to approach chef, but in here, not at all. Just like, he's so easygoing and so friendly. And because the menu is so different than European food or Irish food, so usually I have some questions as well on the menu, and I just go to chef, can I ask you this, what does this mean, and then or how are you supposed to eat this dish, and then he just said he will explain to you and patiently and nicely and the way you will understand. So yeah.
And how did you end up in Ireland?
So 50% is because a movie. So the movie called P.S. I Love You. Yes, and I watched more than 10 times. And I still cry in the end when I still watching that movie. And the other reason is because the Irish man. And then we met 7 years ago, and now he's my husband now. So yeah, and I love Irish people, just so extremely friendly.
So future plans then, Miyazaki-san?
Future plans, just keep doing both Miyazaki takeaway and the Miyazaki takeaway, which is what Japanese people eat every day. And then this is Ichigo Ichie, is a celebration, high-end special occasion restaurant. And then still my mission is more Japanese people, more Japanese food to the Irish people, Europe.
Now, I tried to do a translation lookup of Ichigo Ishii and see what it was in English, and I couldn't find out. So can you tell me what it means?
So Ichigo Ichie, Ichigo is one chance, and Ichie is one meeting. So one chance, one meeting, once in a lifetime. So every time you go back same place, so never same experience again. So every time you appreciate for the new experience.
Well, I can tell you that myself and the people that I dined with here this evening had a truly once-in-a-lifetime experience, and it was a phenomenal food, atmosphere, and personal experience that we all enjoyed. And thank you very much for that, Miyazaki-san. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Arigato.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt. I'm in on my own today as Mags is off on a holiday with the family, and we hope she's enjoying that. Remember, the show is live today, Friday, and it's repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. While we're here live in the studio, you can text us on 086-353-7782. You can call the station 776-2777 or email at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@corkc.ie. And there were a couple of emails in this week about watering, how to save water, what's the best way to save water in the garden, what's the best way to water the plants, how often should you be watering tomatoes, and so on. So I thought we'd have a little chat about that today. Now, one of the many jobs I had to do during the week, brought on by the hot weather, was to water the wall of the walled garden. Not the plants inside the walled garden, but to actually water the wall itself. The walls of the walled garden at Crowan Cottages were built sometime around the late 18th century. So they're very, very old limestone walls and built with lime render. And the lime render over the years has kind of worn in places, leaving behind gaps into which soil and then seed blows. And the walls have actually kind of become a garden, a vertical garden in and of themselves. There's a variety of plants growing there, like hart's tongue fern,
there's even some large verbascum growing up out of the wall now, and I've often thought that once you have verbascum in the garden, you'll never be without it. I like it, an awful lot of people hate it, but it's silvery coloured leaves, very, very large, and then it produces this 3 feet long stem of bright yellow flowers, maybe even higher. I think they're very, very dramatic looking plants. I like having them about the place. But some of the seeds have gotten into the among the gaps in the stones in the wall of the wall garden, and that's where they're growing. And then there's also the Campanula muralis, which I planted into the gaps in the wall, and which has colonized it beautifully and produces these cascades of purple flowers all summer long, really long into the autumn. And they're really, really beautiful. It provides a nice contrast to the kind of grey of the wall, the green of the grass, and then this bright purple flower coming out of the wall. So I'd recommend, if you had a dry spot or a wall where you wanted to plant something, Campanula muralis is the way to go. But there's also another favourite of mine, a gorgeous little plant called the ivy-leaved toadflax. And the leaves, sure enough, are kind of ivy leaf in shape, but much, much smaller. And it has a gorgeous, very, very delicate little flower. One of the common names for it is a travelling sailor. And if ever you pay a visit to the lovely Dunmore East in along the coast and most coastal towns, anywhere there's a wall or even a piece of concrete, you'll find some of these plants growing from there. They like the coastal conditions. They don't particularly mind drought. They're hardy and they'll take an awful lot of abuse. A small little purple snapdragon kind of flower. And you can see them scrambling over walls and towns all over the country, really. The roots creep into little nooks and crannies in the mortar. It is a plant that has a kind of trailing habit, and so it grows down along the wall or down the wall and then branches off into any little cracks that it can get its roots into. And the flowers are very like miniature snapdragons, with a yellow central patch and those ivy-shaped leaves behind. It's thought that it's not native and that it was introduced into England via seeds that were brought with some marble sculptures all the way from Italy. And it established itself initially on the walls of colleges and gardens in Oxford in such abundance that one of the common names for it over there is that it's known as the Oxford weed. Now, apparently the leaves are edible, although I haven't tried this myself yet, and have a similar flavour to watercress. And it is, like I said, very, very, it looks after itself well, and it will colonise walls vertically and any kind of pavements that it can get itself into horizontally as well. And when in bloom, the flower stalks bend towards the light, whilst once the flowers are finished, the seed heads bend the other way so that the seeds are more likely to be shed into the cracks in the stone wall that it's actually growing in. Now, I tell you all of this because I've had to spend some evenings this week watering all of these lovely plants that are growing in the wall. Because if you think it's hot for the plants on the ground that are inclined away from the sun, a wall that's directly facing south or into the sun is just absolutely baked. And sure enough, a lot of those plants were really showing were worse for wear with the lack of water. So a couple of evenings with the hose on the wall, trying as much as possible to get the water into the cracks where the roots are and not on the stone. And I hope I've managed to save some of those. Now, out at Crowan, we have our own well, and so I pump the water myself. It's something I constantly have to mind, though, because with 5 cottages as well as my own house, water is in big demand, and I never want to run out of it. But I know that people up and down the country and here in Kilkenny City are being asked to mind the amount of water that they use. And so I thought we might go through some tips on how to save water in the garden. And these are courtesy of our friend Dee Sewell of GreenSideUp, greensideup.ie. And what Dee recommends, she has 10 tips on her blog website. And she recommends, firstly, to water in the evenings or mornings. And that makes good sense. You don't want to do it during the heat of the day. And she wants you to get the water straight to the roots of the plant. And it's less likely to evaporate, of course, if you do it in the morning or in the evening. If I've often found that just like the bottle I mentioned on the wall earlier on, setting fire to the field of hay, if you put water droplets on a leaf of a plant, it acts like a little lens and can actually focus the sun in on the plant and burn the leaf. The second tip from Dee is water deeply and infrequently. Again, that makes great sense. So it's better for a plant to get a good soak down at the roots than for you to give it a splash every now and again. Mulch the soil, of course, which is a great way of retaining moisture in the soil, but make sure it's wet before you put the mulch down. Makes perfect sense. Weed as often as you can. Get rid of the weeds because they're, of course, going to be using that scarce resource, the water in the ground, as well as your plants. Now, she talks a little bit about lawn care. I'm leaving the lawns, I have to say, out at Crowan to just fend for themselves. I know that they will come back in time. They don't have to look lush and green for me. The guests don't seem to mind. And because they're all on holidays, having a little kind of scorched earth around them or some yellowed grass, I think, adds to the holiday spirit. If you have a greenhouse, it might be worth draping some shady material or putting some whitewash on the glass to reduce the temperature in there. And again, that'll help to preserve some of the water that's in the soil. Dee recommends that you use grey water, and this is the water that's maybe been used in the kitchen already for washing some dishes. So if you save that in a basin or a bucket near the sink, then you can water that out to, or use that to water the plants straight onto the soil. It's not going to do them any harm at all. And she recommends that you group containers together, pots or containers in which you're growing plants, and that can create a humid microclimate and prevent the amount of evaporation. And then finally, her tip for how to deal with this dry weather on greensideup.ie is prepare for next year. And who knows what weather we'll experience then. But she recommends digging in plenty of compost in the autumn, which will help the soil structure. Get yourself some water butts, which are a great way of saving water that you'll be able to use in the garden. And I'd go along with all of those. Really, no time for jobs in the garden this week, and that's okay. It's the middle of summer, so why don't you just sit back and relax and enjoy the garden? The weeds aren't growing that fast. The grass isn't growing that fast either. Less time for jobs, more time for enjoying the fabulous weather. And thank you very much for joining us, or joining me on the Kitchen Garden today. We've just about run out of time now. We'll be back next week. And remember, you can get in touch during the week on Twitter at NesbitF or email to kitchengarden@ckc.ie. We'll be right back.